Hello, everybody. Thank you for tuning in to the Liberty Report. With me today is Daniel McAdams. And Daniel, good to see you today.
I am here.
Yeah, nice you are. To see you made it. Wonderful. Well, today I'd like to talk a little bit about foreign policy item in the news. It has to do with our friendly senator, who happens to be a neoconservative, and we challenge him at times, McCain from Arizona, John McCain. He came out. All of a sudden, he had the privilege to have a major editorial in the New York Times. That's pretty good coverage, and there must be a reason for that. And in thinking about it, I think maybe the neocons are a little bit on the defensive and a little bit worried, and all of a sudden things haven't gone their way completely. Some days it seems like it does, but right now it doesn't seem to be, because it looks like Russia has co-opted the control of the war in Syria, and they have a safe zone they set up, and it sort of, I would think it maybe embarrassed our administration and embarrassed the hardcore neocons. And also, they're concerned, of course, with the negotiations that are about to go on tomorrow with Lavrov and Tillerson. And it may look like they're accommodating each other and coming together more so, because the neocons were very upset when administration announced that they would lighten up or maybe not add any more sanctions on Russia, but really go after the Iranians. That really confused the neocons. Yeah, go after the Iranians, but also go after the Russians, this sort of thing. So there's a lot going on, but this is significant, and McCain comes down hard. The headlines frequently said, hammers Tillerson, really going after him and challenging him on moral principles and foreign policy. And quite frankly, when we look at this carefully, though they're fighting over foreign policy, I'm not convinced that philosophically there's a whole lot of difference, maybe tone and maybe degree, but not a whole lot of difference between the two of them.
Yeah, you know, the precipitating factor for McCain's outburst is that Secretary Tillerson addressed some State Department employees, and he made the point that our values, our human rights may not necessarily always be able to be at the center of our foreign policy actions. Our national security goals may not always coincide with the export of human rights and American values, et cetera. And this is what upset McCain, because he said we have to have a values-based foreign policy. We have to be the policeman of the world when it comes to human rights. And he was very frustrated. He said, we are a country with a conscience. Moral concerns must be an essential part of our foreign policy.
Of course, he gets to define what conscience means and what kind of a policy that brings about. But in challenging U.S. values is his big thing. But he doesn't look at it quite the way we would, because I think we have values and sometimes we don't do a very good job. But he's assuming that the wars that we get involved in, you know, and all the activity going on and the interventions and the bombing, occupations, maybe that's a violation of our values. I happen to think it is, but that's not what he's thinking about. He's thinking about excuses to do more and more. And also, he was complaining about the human rights things that Tillerson and our administration isn't expressing enough concern about the people who have been oppressed. Well, why are they being oppressed? Is it always their own government that did it, that made the oppression? Or where is the oppression? Just list all the countries we've been in the last 15 years. That's where people are really being oppressed. But there's never a reflection, never a consideration of, you know, the policies. And it might be very hard ever to look into somebody's mind and challenge actually what they want. They may want and desire things to happen a certain way and have real concerns. But the side of the argument that comes our way is their total failure, not just a failure here and there, but the total failure of our policies, especially, I think, since 1990, especially, not that I'd brag about a foreign policy with Vietnam and Korea, but especially in the more current period from 1990 on, especially in this century, it's a total failure. And they argue the moral case and that it is necessary for our national security. That's where I think they get it wrong.
Yeah, and look at McCain's own actions. He talks about exporting our values and these sorts of things. But what does he do when he goes overseas? He went to Syria back in 2014, and he found himself photographed with a notorious terrorist. And, you know, as a matter of fact, Senator Paul made a good point after that, because McCain went over there to make the case for us giving more guns to people. You got to give them more guns, the rebels. You got to give them more guns. They're fighting for human rights. He goes over and gets photographed with a terrorist. And Senator Paul said, well, if he doesn't even know who he's getting photographed with, how does he know who to give the guns to?
Yeah, there you go.
That was a good point. But he did the same thing in Ukraine. He was over there fighting for human rights, and then he appears on the stage with the head of the Sloboda Party, which is notoriously neo-Nazi in orientation. The guy who he's photographed with, a couple of days later, is giving the Nazi salute at another rally. So he does this. He steps into this constantly.
And that's much more than what Trump has done, but he's critical of Trump for actually saying something which is off the cuff in many ways, that he has said things that were not overly critical with Erdogan, El-Sisi, Putin, and Un. You know, he'll say, oh, why don't we talk to them, Un? You know, this sort of thing. That is less harmful than what McCain has been talking about. He literally wants to change policy and goes over and then say, well, we know how to sort of. He still takes that same case that there are moderates in there. And right now, the moderates aren't winning, and the Russians are winning, and Iran is winning, and the neocons are losing. And I think it's another chance, another opportunity for us to sort of stand back and look at it. It's not going to be harmful to American security. You know, this whole idea that we have to prove ourselves by, spreading American values. But unfortunately, our administration wants to show American strength and values by dropping a lot of bombs and big bombs at that, and saying that we can never back down right now. The aggressive talk about Afghanistan is worrisome. More troops. And Trump just said today, we cannot lose. We have to win. We have to utterly eliminate the Taliban. But if he really understood who the Taliban represents and what that whole culture is about, he wouldn't be making those bold statements.
Yeah, and you know, before we, we were talking about the show before we came on, you were thinking, there's got to be some reason why he wrote this at this time. You know, we were trying to figure out why the panic all of a sudden, and you did hit on it, so I'm going to remind our audience, you did hit on it perfectly. It is all about Syria. As a matter of fact, Lavrov and Tillerson are meeting tomorrow to talk about Ukraine and Syria, and I think this is really the frame of what McCain was trying to say. This is our values versus our national security goals. You've got to come down on the side of our values. He's talking about our values are supporting what he still continues to believe are freedom fighters in Syria, and our national security interests are in ending the war and getting us out, and what the president himself said, which we don't necessarily agree with, which is getting rid of ISIS.
That's right,
man. So,
you know, the war, I think, is one of the big issues that's going on, that's motivating this whole thing that's going on with McCain. But the other one is the meeting. The meeting is coming up tomorrow, yeah, with Lavrov. They want to stop that because that's way too much niceness to the Russians, and they don't want to do that. The Russians have to be the enemies. And that, I don't know where the administration stands on that. It isn't taking the position of how you treat other people and try to develop that and be as consistent as possible. It's on again, off again, friendship, and then they're the worst people in the world, and now don't put on the sanctions, and we need to talk to the Russians. This is the big problem. They make it sound like the big battles between the neocons and the realists. And I generally think of this not partially in that category, but I think of it in two ways. You have interventionism, a principle that we defend, and we have the other side, which are the interventionists, which is more or less what we've developed over the last 100 years. Intense involvement, moral obligation to make the world safe for democracy, that we have to turn all the countries into Democrats, and at the same time, it blends in with developing our empire. But I think that the realists and also the neocons are interventionists, but they're arguing over power and maybe tinkering on the edges, and that's the reason why we shouldn't be shocked that that intervention has an argument because, you know, the people in power, very important, who gets to make the decisions, and that goes back and forth, and therefore they can change their mind. And just think of the times that we have switched allegiance to people, you know, over the years. I mean, Iraq is a good example. Allegiance, oh yeah, they're our best allies, and then all of a sudden we turn on them, you know, Panama.
Gaddafi as well. Noriega.
And all that switch, Egypt. And so that I think is one of the biggest danger of interventionism. It's so arbitrary. It depends on power and clout and condition. They think that's great. Oh, well, you don't want to be locked in on a philosophy of freedom and minding our own business and national defense and looking after America's interests and looking after our liberties. No, that's being locked in on a philosophy. Well, they're locked in on a philosophy, although it's arbitrary, is still a philosophy of intervention, believing that we are an exceptional nation, that we have a locked-in understanding of what morality is. And like McCain says, he can't understand... you know, the administration doesn't have a conscience, but McCain has a conscience, and he may well personally have it, but his conscience on foreign policy is something that is very important. What does his conscience tell us? That we have to follow his very, very authoritarian neocon approach. So I think that's really where the challenge is, and that, of course, is why people say, well, you guys on this report, you're too dogmatic, and you stick with your principles. You need to be more flexible. Well, I think they're inflexible with their inflexibility. Or flexibility. They're inflexible. They do whatever they want arbitrarily day to day, and whose ox is getting gored, and all in the name of humanity and what's best for America's Constitution and American liberty. We go and we fight these wars to spread democracy, to defend America's Constitution. I think that is just pure hype. I think it's just propaganda, war propaganda for the powerful special interests, and they have been in charge. But if the American people wake up, they have ways of stopping. They have in the past, unfortunately, only after much, much harm is done. It was finally stopped in over Vietnam, and we had a token victory when we argued with Obama about starting bombing in Syria. So it can be won, but the people need to be awake, and they need to let their members of Congress know. Right now, the members of Congress think the American people are absolutely locked in on endless fighting and squabbling, and I think this has a lot to do with the rhetoric that we hear from the administration, and maybe patched in with not a desire to start a war, drop bombs where there aren't any people, and a few things like that. So that to me, I think, is the big picture. But on the short one, I think what's going on now, there's a description to show that the war is being lost, to our side of the game. I don't consider it a real loss. And the other thing is trying to interfere and influence the discussions that are going to go on tomorrow between Lavrov and Tillerson.
You know, I think even taking McCain, giving him the benefit of all doubt, in his heart, he really believes that human rights are important, they're the number one of importance that we should do. Even if you believed all that, look at the concrete examples of where his philosophy, his approach have triumphed. Look at places like Libya, look at Syria, look at Ukraine. Everywhere that he's counseled U.S. foreign policy action to defend our values, go ask any Libyan if they are happier now, if they have a better life now than they had before we went in to liberate them. Ask any Iraqi if they're better off now. You know, or any Syrian or anyone in Ukraine, even the people that are in Kiev with their GDP going down, with their standard of living going way down because we've separated them from their natural trading partner for their own good. Ask any of these people. So even if he had the best interest at heart, he simply doesn't have we don't have the capacity to know what's good for someone else.
Right. You know, you described the recent graveyards, but, you know, they talked about a graveyard place called Afghanistan, the graveyard of empire. And that's not 100 years. That's a couple thousand years that empires tried to go in there and outsiders dominate the Afghans. And it never seems to work, probably won't work. They won't recognize the fact that there's a culture over there that is tribalistic and outsiders may frown upon it, and they may think, well, we don't think they should be that. They should have a strong national government, and they should give us a license or give us a control over their land so we can put our pipelines in, and they need to modernize. At the same time, it hasn't changed, and yet that's part of what goes on, too, is molding the world. And that whole thing about what happened after 9/11, it was sort of separate from 9/11 itself, but the neocons, this gives us an opportunity to take advantage of this, to remake the Middle East. Well, they had a chance after World War I. They didn't do a very good job, and that's, you know, part of the problem even today, and it's still falling apart. So, yes, they're in there trying to do it, and you just pointed out all the examples of failure, but they won't pay any attention. My question, though, or my aggravation is it's so obvious, it's so clear. If the American people knew and had that information, I believe that 90% would be on our side. You're right. Stay out of there. It doesn't help. We don't have any money. It distracts from our liberties. It distracts from our financial benefits here at home. It undermines our Constitution. And yet the people, because they're lackadaisical, and they don't go searching, and we can't get them on our network, you know, and more all the time. But they just go and depend on the news, the conventional news, which is controlled, you know, by the war party. And they're the same. It's the Republican and Democrats really and truly don't have a difference in foreign policy. They don't have a difference on monetary policy. They support the banking industry. They support the Federal Reserve. They don't have a different opinion on welfareism and the welfare state. And they essentially, except for the few that we know, they endorse interventionist Keynesian economics that deficits don't matter. Give the people what they want, and deficits can be monetized, and everything is going to be okay. Just look, the stock market is doing great. And yet, at the same time, you look and you say more people moving back home than ever before when they're in their 20s and late 20s.
Yeah. And I would say, you know, my final word sort of takes off on what you just said. Politicians don't really have a clue that the Americans are not where they are when it comes to this. They need to be in touch with them. You know, people have got to realize that we non-interventionists are the real patriots. We're accused of being Putin's poodles and all this. We're the patriots because we want to keep our country and our kids in a country where they can afford to live a decent life. We're not getting there spending trillions of dollars every year on this empire.
That's right. I want to thank the audience for tuning in today. And one thing is more difficult, and I'll admit it, is if we take our position, we get painted as uncaring. We don't care about other people. And sometimes there's some real legitimate problems within one country, one dictator, and people are suffering. And they say, well, we have this moral obligation. We have to go in there and do something. And that's where it's harder to draw the line. But that doesn't mean that we don't care. It doesn't mean we can't help. Just stay away from the government. Governments are abusive. They go and pick and choose and manipulate. But there's no reason that if there's an entity in the Middle East or Central America, South America, that you have sympathies for and would like to help, in a libertarian society, you're not prohibited from doing that. In our society, you have to be very, very careful with whom you speak, because it may come back to haunt you as a private citizen, and how we will help people. So even the voluntary groups that can go around worldwide are usually overtaken by the government groups. So it's not like we don't care. And I think Daniel made the perfect point that even with the best of intentions on trying to straighten some of this mess out, it doesn't work. That's the strongest argument against it. But it doesn't mean that we don't care, and it doesn't mean that you can't send some help. But I think the best thing we can do is set a good example. Set a good example of what it's like to live in a republic that honors and respects individual liberties, free markets, property rights, and recognize the principle that we are independent people. We have a right to our life and our liberty, and we ought to have a right to the fruits of our labors, and the government shouldn't be able to control those fruits. And that's what happens when you have an interventionist foreign policy. They have essentially absolute control over the fruits of our labor, eventually destroying production, and the country becomes impoverished and the middle class gets wiped out. That's where we are today. That's why it's vital that we get greater support for the principles of non-intervention and support for the concept of individual liberty. I want to thank everybody for tuning in today to the Liberty Report. Please come back soon.